In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Really happy in studio to have Bobby Meacham, obviously former pro ball player, and he's been in pro baseball. How long, Bobby? How long has it been? That's the total number of years without dating you too much?
Should I say 43 years.
That's just... I love your perspective. Now he's the AA manager for the Hartford Yard Goats, who's the affiliate for the Colorado Rockies. Brian Shackman, John Senecal here, along with Mr. Meacham. And I'm pretty fascinated because you can talk about a couple generations of athletes, right? And I'm just curious... How the is the athlete, the mental side, because I have three teenagers, mm-hmm. and they are not like I was. And I love my kids, but they are different. And I think it's not all positive. I think whether it's technology or what, I don't know. But are the problems the same? Are the challenges the same? Are the kids the same?
I always start every conversation that answers that question with, it's our fault. You know, it's like the people who raise our kids, we kind of do it the way we're supposed to, the way society tells us to. And sometimes it's not right. But I think the players are the same. I think they're the same as when I was there. It's just a matter of who's around them, who the coaching is, what kind of philosophies we come up with for them, what kind of systems and processes we put in place for them, and then they react to that. So I really, truly believe the players are basically the same, and it's just a matter. What matters is how we treat them and how we coach them.
How important for you, and just looking at your past, like you started off in the minors, you struggled a little bit, and then you turned the corner maybe when you switched to the Yankees organization. And now you see kids with the high bonuses, they're getting to the majors sooner. Mm-hmm. How important are the minors still in the group? Because we know baseball is about failure, right? I mean, you got to fail before you can succeed, almost everybody. I mean, is it still super valuable in your opinion?
Yeah, it can be. You know, I've looked at it two different ways. I was a high pick. So I wasn't as good as I was supposed to be, as I always tell my son. But I was a high pick, and I see these guys that are, you know, we kind of treat them, like I said, we treat them differently because, oh, man, they signed for a lot of money, or they were a high pick, and they're always the favorite on one team. So, and then we treat them differently, so then they don't learn as much. I think back when I played, the reason I had so much success, I believe, is quickly is because I got traded to the Yankees. So drafted by the Cardinals, and then the Yankees got me. They didn't care that I was the number one pick. They didn't know I was. They didn't care at all. So I just got a lot of information from a lot of coaches. Billy Martin taught me a ton. Don Zimmer taught me a ton. Yogi Berra taught me a ton. Then the players I was surrounded by, like Randolphs and the Winfields, I was able to learn because they didn't care about anything but getting me better so we as a team could get better.
John?
Yeah, you talk about learning from these coaches and stuff, but I'm interested further back in mm-hmm. your development. When did it kick in for you to become a switch hitter? Because we don't see that in baseball at all, really, across the board in the history of baseball, and especially nowadays. When did it kick in for you?
Yeah, my wife's saying is it's the worst thing you ever did in baseball.
Why? Why did she say that?
Well, you know, I was All-American at San Diego State. I was the first-round pick hitting just right-handed. Never hit left-handed before I got to my 1982 season. The Cardinals, and that back then, liked to take guys who were fast and make them switch hitters. So it was always a maybe if I was going to hit at the pro level when I was a prospect in college ball. So they right away made me a switch hitter, and I had success right away. I went to A-ball, hit 260 my very first year in high A-ball, and but then the problem was after that, I got traded to the Yankees, and I only spent one half a season in the minor leagues before I got called up for the first time. So I literally have 1.5 seasons of switch hitting. So that minor league development didn't really happen as far as on the offensive side. And I basically had to learn at the big league level.
Wait, so you stayed a switch hitter in the bigs?
Yeah,
First of all, that's insane. First of all, I didn't know that. I thought maybe you grew up switch hitting, but you became a late bloomer. Switch. I've never heard of that in my whole life.
Yeah, it was kind of, it happened back then. It was pretty common for guys that could run, especially in that Cardinals organization.
What's your natural, right? And so you became a slap hitter left-handed? Or
I was always a slap hitter, even right-handed in college. You know, even to the end of my – I remember I was at San Diego State, right? And I went back for an induction of the – whatever. You know, they get rid of – they honor you with a number of retirement.
Yeah, Hall of Famer.
And Tony Gwynn. I played with Tony. Tony Gwynn for 3 years there. And Tony was like, at the very end, he's taking me to the airport. And, you know, we're old and older and kind of like reminiscing. He goes, hey, let me ask you a question and don't get mad. I go, what's up? He's like, why did you switch hit? You know, it was like, because you could hit. And I was like, yeah, it wasn't the point. You know, it was the Cardinals kind of way of doing things. And I basically had to learn at the big league level.
Huh. That's crazy.
It's amazing. It really is. I was expecting you to be like, oh, yeah, I was 13. I was in Little League. No. I was bored one day. And I
But you wanted to talk about Gwynn.
Yeah. So you mentioned Tony Gwynn. And, you know, if you read about your relationship with Tony Gwynn, it says that you basically encouraged him to play baseball. Like, what's the real story?
Yeah,
here's
the real deal, guys. I was in high school. Tony was a year ahead of me, and he went to high school in Long Beach. I went to high school, probably well-known school now, Modern Day High School in Santa Ana. So we played against each other in summer league. He was a year ahead of me. I forgot all about Tony. I remembered him because he played on against him. And then when we went to the state tournament at the end, we picked him up to play for us on our team. So I got
a good pickup.
So exactly.
By the way, you have the same SoCal diction, by the way, the both of you.
Oh, do we?
Yeah, totally. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no. So then a friend of mine who was a year ahead of me at Modern Day, he went to San Diego State, named Nick Harsh. So Nick goes to San Diego State, and he says, hey, man, you remember this guy? Because I was getting recruited to go to San Diego State my senior year in high school. He goes, remember that guy that played for us in summer, that guy Tony? I go, yeah. He goes, well, he's here. I said, wow, man, that's awesome. If I go there, we're going to have a great team, I bet. And he goes, no, he's not even playing baseball. He's playing basketball. He's on a basketball scholarship. So we're all scheming and planning. When I come to San Diego State, we got to talk him into playing baseball. So I got to San Diego State my freshman year. Just so happens the basketball, he was a sophomore. He was a starting point guard, doing great in basketball. We tried to talk him into playing baseball, but he said, I can't because I'm on a basketball scholarship. My coach won't let me. So fast forward to they had a terrible season again, and the coach got fired. And in the interim, Tony just we brought him to our baseball coach, Jim Dietz, and said, hey, this guy's got to play for us. And Jim let him play. And then when he got back to basketball, he talked to his new basketball coach and said, I'm doing both. And that's how Tony started.
So you're talking about one of the best hitters in professional baseball, Hall of Famer, basically doesn't start playing like real baseball competitively until he's almost a junior in college.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because in sophomore year in college, he got a bit part, right, after fastball season was over. And then finally, you know, all of us, I knew, but coach was convinced he should play every day once he gets done with basketball season. So he finished basketball season the next 2 years, then come out for baseball.
Was the coach like, right, was it right away with him? Once you saw him at the plate, you knew?
Oh, man. I remember, you know, him, like I said, from high school.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those things where it's like, man, this definitely translates to college, too. Because right away, it was almost embarrassing. You know, he'd come out after we'd play 10 games, and he would already have more, like, RBIs than me. You know, and I'd be like, in our first doubleheader or something. I'm like, this is crazy. Tony,
you got to take some credit for a Hall of Fame career. It just wasn't yours.
Well, I think the basketball team should take credit for being terrible. That's how he got.
Imagine how if it had a good basketball team, how history would have been changed.
Yeah, it would have been totally different. Listen, we're so glad to have Bobby Meacham in, the AA manager for the Hartford Yard Goats, the Colorado Rockies affiliate here on Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. John Senecal, myself, Brian Shackman here. We should probably go straight ahead to the Yankees since, you know, the premise of this podcast. And, you know, you talked about, was it the 85 season when they won 95?
Yeah, you come to the Yankees in, what, 83?
I got called up in 83. And 85 is when we won actually 97 games and did not make the playoffs.
You could have made it. I mean, now you'd be the first wild card, you know, and you could easily win the World Series. There are so many great teams littered in the 70s and 80s that never made the playoffs. But I want to start broad brush. I'm just curious, like, That was not a championship era for the Yankees, right? And so what was it like to be a New York Yankee?
Yeah, for me, you know, well, it's all I knew as a big leaguer. You know, it's the only team I ever played for in the big leagues. And so in that era, all we cared about was, you know, we got to continue to win. They won in 81, I guess they went to the World Series. And when I came up in 83, it was just about winning. And George Steinbrenner, that's all that mattered to him. So I was in the midst of just basically trying to be a good big leaguer for the first time, and also not be the weak link that pulled us down. And be honest with you, I feel like if I truly would have been the player I was supposed to be, we would have made playoffs and we would have won championships in that era, because we won a ton of games. We just needed a little bit more, a little bit bigger push to get to the playoffs and make it to the World Series.
The thing that blew me away when I went back and looked at that roster and the lineup is, I remember watching, that's in my heyday. I'm 10, 11, 12 years old. And you guys are my team, and I first, I'm thinking Bobby Meacham, I think of your 1985 Topps card, right away, and I know the name, but I'm looking at the roster and I'm thinking, Mattingly, Winfield, and you and Weiniger and all, I don't think Weiniger might have been there yet, but I look at the strikeouts. I look at the strikeouts, right? And I look at the strikeouts nowadays for a guy if Dave Winfield was playing nowadays and he, you think, oh, he's striking out 150 times or 160 times, but he's not. He's striking out 40 times in a season. What was the difference? Is there a difference between nowadays and back then?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference, Sean, is that now guys are allowed to. I go back to it's our fault. We always have this narrative that, hey, big home run hitters are, they're going to swing hard and swing for the fences. Of course they're going to strike out. Well, we weren't allowed. It was like a no-no to take strike three if it was a close pitch. It wasn't like we come back and look at the computer and see if the umpire was wrong. It was, hey, that pitch is too close to take. Guys, put the ball in play. And now it's almost allowed where guys are, of course they're going to strike out. I love looking into that, you just did, dug into Winfield's numbers. I love looking back, and I'll give you guys another number. If you take the four top home run hitters of all time, with a total of about 80 years worth of baseball, they've only struck out of those 80 years, those top four guys. You got Ruth, Mays, Bonds, and I'm missing Aaron. One time, 100 strikeout season. May struck out once, 100 times.
That's incredible.
Times. I mean, you don't have to strike out if you're a home run hitter.
It is stunning. And I think you said he led the team with 107, right?
Yeah.
It was something like that.
Yeah.
I have some. I guess I'll go here right now because I want to ask about Billy Martin, but I want to go deep. First of all, an incredible career in professional baseball. I almost feel like there's a tinge of regret about how you yourself performed. And you're a great player though. And it just maybe it's so hard. I mean, I couldn't hit a curve. I was out by Babe Ruth. Don't sell yourself short. But having said that, what is it? Is it the switch hitting part that you regret, or is it just you just didn't have more time to season yourself before things were real? What do you point to?
A little bit of both. Both of those things. A little bit of more seasoning would have helped. A little bit more patience from the
management.
Billy Martin. He played me all the time. I played 156 games, even though I hit 220 maybe that year in 85. But I played the last 2 months after cutting a cast off, and I was swinging left-handed only for the last 2 months. Nobody remembers that part. And like I said, I wasn't very good. I just learned how to hit switch hit. I had a bad wrist. So it was some injuries. There were some things that I wish I'd had more seasoning, maybe not in the minor leagues, but necessarily, but because I hit 250 my first season,
right,
in the big leagues, but just a little more patience with what I could do,
right,
and how
so
I
if you were on a crap salad team, you could have breathed a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I talked to buddies of mine. They were on, pick the Mariners or something like that. And they had time. They had, okay, let's let this guy get better and better, and we'll be better as a team. Well, New York, without winning championships in the 80s, well, since 81, getting to the World Series, that wasn't good enough for George. And I'm all for it. I want to win. So, like I said, I didn't do my part to be good enough to stay around to make sure we did win.
You mentioned the strikeouts and home run hitters, prolific home run hitters, and one of the main ones you mentioned was Hank Aaron.
Right.
Some will argue is the home run hitter of all time. Now, as we record now, today is the anniversary when he broke Babe Ruth's home run record. Now, if I'm doing my fuzzy math here, you're probably around 13, 14 years old at the time of him going up for that record. Was that something that shaped you as a person or as a player, being the same descent and everything?
Yeah, I definitely. I remember the thing I remember the most about Hank Aaron is when he signed the largest contract in the history of baseball. I'm going to guess it was 100,000 a year, or maybe it was 200, or something like a round number like that. And I remember telling my mom, because growing up I was a big, big baseball fan, a big Dodger fan in Southern California. And I remember telling my mom, I'm gonna make more than that, Mom. I'm gonna be a big leaguer, and I'm not going to be as good as Hank Aaron, but I remember seeing his salary and hearing about the records and that he was breaking and thinking, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do something special in baseball. And, it was like you said, being an African-American and in this country and seeing that happen and all that surrounded it, It's pretty special.
Yeah, I'm curious if you can just share with us, whether it's George or Billy or Yogi, just give us a story that hasn't like hit the papers or even like go in the Wayback Machine and give me some color that we wouldn't get anywhere else on those guys. Because it's like they're mythical figures for us, you know?
Well, I can give you a couple. I mean, like Yogi, I remember my first thing with Yogi when my first spring training, he was the first base coach, I believe. We had so many coaches pass through, but I believe he was the first base coach for us. And I was thinking, Yogi Berra, wow, I heard all the stories about his yogiisms, right? And so my first day, we go out after the first workout's done, we go out, hey, go down the right field line with Yogi, and he's going to run you guys some sprints. So he goes, all right, guys, he goes, pair off into threes, and let's run. And I'm like, and run some, I'm like, and everybody just got, you know, into groups of threes. And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, wait, that, no, I'm the only one that recognized it was yogiism, pair off into threes. So that's one of them. Billy was my favorite to play for. And man, Billy, I remember one time he came out of the clubhouse. I just blew a game. I think I made an error. It cost us the game at the very end. And he just walked out and he looked at me. He's got his skivvies on. He's got a, I think he might have had a pipe in his mouth or something, you know, one of those mythical like things. He walks out and he looks at me and just shakes, nods his head. And I go, what? And he goes, what's wrong with you? I said, ah, man, my bad for making, you know, costing us that game. He goes, you're bad. He goes, that's my bad for playing you.
Was his, you know, his struggles, the dark side of him, was that evident to people?
I was 23 years old when I came out, or 22 when I got called up for the first time, and I just loved the information he gave me. Of course, I could tell he, you know, later I'm thinking, is he drunk or, you know, or is he, you know, has he been drinking kind of thing, or is he, but it, when, you know, the game started, he was smart. I knew we had an advantage because he was our manager. When he talked to me about baseball, I listened, and I mean, I stood up and listened and perked up and went, man, this guy's amazing with the information he's given me. So I never doubted. I love playing for the man because he taught me a ton, and he let me do what I do best, and that's play baseball.
You know, I wish we had more time, maybe midseason or something, and some break you'll come back, because it's just we have a whole lot more questions, and you're a great resource now in our back door for hopefully a while. So you think you maybe come back?
Absolutely, Brian. No problem.
All right, Bobby Meacham. This has been Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.